Welcome to the spoiler room. 8 weeks of Alfred Hitchcock. The next 8 episodes, we will be covering some films that are known and not so known of Alfred Hitchcock's. We hope you enjoy the show and aren't too scared. If you do get scared, please pause the podcast, have a drink, come back and finish the podcast. Thank you and enjoy.
Yes, and welcome, my friends. We are rolling through our 8 weeks of Hitchcock. We have 2 weeks to go today, this week and next week. And I'm kind of sad to see it go fade away. We may do another block because Hitchcock's done so many films. But tonight, we are going to look at a Hitchcock film of a different feather, if you will. Yes, it's a dad joke. I'm a dad. Leave me alone. And we're going to 1963 now, and we're looking at Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. And with me tonight is the one and only David from Inside Movies Galore. Hello, David. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I think I'm just going to wing this one.
Oh, man. That's... God, okay, that we got all the bird puns out of the way, I think. Maybe, I don't know. David, did you want to give the synopsis of The Birds?
Well, the synopsis of this film is basically it's a man against nature versus man kind of a film. And we have a lawyer who ends up antagonizing a young woman for doing some kind of a prank. And she ends up following him back to whatever island that he kind of lives off of, a lagoon. And then birds start attacking from nowhere. And it just goes mad from there.
Yeah, it's north of San Diego. It's in Bodega Bay. And yeah, birds pretty much attack a small Bodega Bay town back in the day. We're talking 1963 here. So that, you know, things are, I still have some nature to it. It's some smaller town feeling to them. Starring Rod Taylor as Mitch Brenner, the lawyer. And we have Tippi Hedren. It actually introducing Tippi Hedren in this film as Melania Daniels, who is the socialite who pursues the said lawyer and then regrets pursuing him to Bodega Bay as the birds attack. David, you've been on a couple of these shows now where we're doing the 8 weeks of Hitchcock. And yes, folks, we're probably going to jump around a bit again because these are Hitchcock films. So they've been dissected and we will be dissecting them, but we may not exactly go in order. But would you say after you're done watching this, this is a different film than the other Hitchcock films we've watched up to this point, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you know, what's funny is I think a couple of months ago on my podcast, we did Frogs.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly on that particular film, we noticed that, you know, there was nature against, you know, man kind of an idea. And that's what's in this this film. It's basically, you know, these different groups of birds that start to attack, you know, the people in this Bodega Bay area, you know, and it's not just the people, it's the children as well.
Yeah, they go after everybody. What I thought was interesting with this one versus the other ones up to this point are the characters themselves, because up until this point, at least the other Hitchcock ones we've picked, we've watched for this 8 weeks of Hitchcock, you've had at least one character or two that were very charismatic, you know, that you could latch on to, like, well, I mean, most of them were Jimmy Stewart, but still, you had a character that...
The only character that I could really latch on to was the little girl who evidently lived with the family, you know.
Well, she's the sister. She was the actual sister of.
Oh, so she was the sister. Okay.
Yeah, she was the sister. She, which a lot of people said, oh, well, she was too young. But I'm like, well, no, if the mom, Lydia, who was played brilliantly by Jessica Tandy,
oh, yeah.
If Lydia had her son when she was 18, you know, 20 years later, 22 years later, her, you know, her son, and she had another child, you know, she's not, it is within the realm of possibility that she would have a child that is this young yet, you know, in the form of Kathy. So yeah, I mean, there is, she's about the only one you do connect with, because again, and I'm going to keep going back to that tonight, because it struck me right away that especially the first hour of this film, which is basically set up, we don't really get to the birds right away, which is Hitchcock messing with your audience, because he's like, yeah, the movie's titled The Birds, I'm gonna make you wait. Okay.
Oh yeah, first it's kind of like a play-by-play, you know, okay you got this, a seemingly womanizing lawyer who evidently wanted to lay down the law with her for, first and foremost, when he went into the bird thing. And then she somehow ends up taking him the birds that he wanted anyways to him.
Well, he teased her, and I think he intrigued her, because she was used to, you could tell she was a socialite, and her dad was, you know, a big name newspaper. So the impression you get from her character is that she's kind of used to guys falling for, you know, trying to gain her attention. I mean, when she's walking up to the bird shop, someone wolf whistles her, basically. Mm-hmm. And she turns and she actually smiles a little. She finds it humorous. So then you get this lawyer who baits her into this prank into the birds, because she acts like she knows what the birds are, and he knows it's a line of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out he knows her. And I think that intrigued her. So that's why she looked for an excuse to go up to Bodega Bay to take the lovebirds that he was initially looking for.
Oh God. That's the part that I absolutely loved. The when she took the birds up there, and the birds were just, swaying side to side on the road.
Yeah. When she's driving, cause she drives too fast, and the birds were swaying, yeah, with the turns.
I think that was one of my favorite moments in the film.
Well, that's that Alfred Hitchcock humor, who he works in humor even in the most kind of unexpected spots. Because you get that later on, in all honesty, later on, way in the third act, when the birds are in full-fledged attack mode and that, and you get them trying to leave the house, and Mitch suddenly opens a door and there's nothing but birds in front. It's like supposed to be scary, but it's actually kind of humorous.
It is, because they're moving away as the car rolls forward.
So, so there is that humor, but yeah, her going up to Bodega Bay, which shows you the change of times, because she goes up to Bodega Bay, and we're talking about Melania Daniels, played by Tippi Hedren. So Melania here goes up to Bodega Bay with these birds, and she's trying to track down the lawyer. Doesn't know where he lives, so she just asks someone random, which isn't a problem. But David, then she, and shows you the change of times, she goes, well, who's the little girl? What's her name? So here's a strange woman from out of town asking about what the name is of the little girl. And so the guy isn't quite sure. So he says, oh, go talk to the teacher. She knows all the name of the kids. And I'm just sitting here going, this is creepy. it just shows the sign of the times. Cause I'm like sitting there, man, if you did that now, they'd be calling the cops.
Well, this is a small town. They're trusting. So yeah,
that's true.
But I also, you know, somewhat got the sense, like, because after she left, he was on the phone. So it was almost like Rod Taylor's character had him in on the whole thing to begin with.
You almost get that impression, though they don't really
No.
Allude to it later on, whether or not he did actually give Mitch a heads up. Because I thought that's where they were going with it. You know, oh, hey, there's a woman here asking about you, dude. You know.
And I was thinking, okay, well, he probably let the whole town know, okay, this woman might come after, come follow him. Just let her know where I am.
So, you know, I mean, so you have Melania now, who's in this small town, who's kind of out of her element. She's chasing after Mitch Brenner, you know, the lawyer. And it turns out, of course, being a small town, she crosses paths with the one woman who used to be involved with Mitch Brenner. The school teacher.
Which wasn't exactly alluded to, but you got that presence and feel, especially with the way that she spoke about him, you know.
The way she spoke about him and the way she
exactly
approached Melania got a little catty.
Yeah, she did.
What'd you think about those scenes between her?
Freaked me out a little bit too because she was kind of like on edge, like she had the claws like right there, ready to come out, you know, if need be. Mm-hmm. You know, she had that underlying tone, like, bitch, if you say something once.
Yeah, you know, and meanwhile, Melania is just lying up a storm to Mitch, saying she knows Annie Hayworth, teacher, and her friends, and she's staying with her.
Suddenly, like, oh yeah, we went to college together.
You know, it's like, oh, but really though, that's where the difference, like I said again, with the other ones we've watched, I really didn't like any of these characters. Don't get me wrong, they performed beautifully. There were fantastic performances, like you said, especially, you know, Jessica Tandy, who we'll talk about in just a little bit. But for me, I didn't care for any of the main characters, really. They're not likable people. Almost
put it in a light where even if the birds attacked and killed them, you couldn't care less if any of them would have lived.
Well, see, and that's the thing, though. For me, I had a little bit of a sympathy later on as the birds started going after Daniels, you know, after her. I did kind of feel at least still some sympathy, but it was more for just you don't want to see something bad happen to anyone, mm-hmm. You know. But I wasn't, like, really liking her character or attached to her character like the rest for most of the film. You know, and you've got Mitch, who really is not a charismatic guy. Rod Taylor, he does okay in this role, but there's not a lot of charisma or even chemistry between these two throughout the film. But I don't think, unlike the other films, I don't think that's the main purpose of these people with Hitchcock and the birds. I think it's he knows you want to see the birds, but first you've got to deal with these people.
Yeah.
You know, I just, until Jessica Tandy shows up, who I love, and again, David, again, a mother figure.
Yeah, okay. So everyone knows, evidently Jessica Tandy's character is a mother. She lives with her daughter and her son. And evidently, it seems like the father must still be on her mind.
Yes.
And maybe it's not that far off from his death.
Mm. Yeah, they never, I don't think they ever quite mention when he died, just that he did pass. And you can tell, you know, he's out of it.
Feeling, even though, because not only was this film somewhat about, you know, man versus, well, it was mainly about man versus nature. Come on.
Yeah.
But I got the underlying feeling that that there was an idea that was being pushed that this was somewhat also an emotional attachment. You know, this woman didn't want to live without her son. So she was trying to get to know the woman that evidently within a day and a half, suddenly he's got like all these like strong feelings for her.
Well, I mean, some, but you know, she's a socialite, and she's been in the spotlight, and the mom knows she has, and she knows what, you know, shenanigans have happened to Miss Melania Daniels, and she doesn't want her son mixed up with this woman.
Well, let's talk about what led up to this moment for a moment then. Evidently, as she's finally reaching Rod Taylor's character, Daniel, she gets hit by a bird.
Yes, she does. Well, she takes a boat out
to a cafe.
Yeah, because she took a boat out to go secretly deliver the lovebirds, and on her way back, she gets smacked with a bird. And Mitch saw that she was getting across the boat, and he hauled ass to the other side of the lake to meet her. And she's bleeding now because she's got a cut on her head because a bird hit her. You know, that was the scout of the birds. He was like, "No, I'm going to take a pot shot." Other bird buddies like, "No, dude, we're just recon."
And these were gulls. These were seagulls.
Yes. So the gulls, you know, they're cranky anyway, but they're on patrol, bird patrol. They're like doing recon. And he's like, "I got to take a hit. I got to go for it."
Yeah, you're incoming.
Dude, and she takes one right in the head too. I don't care if it's a puppet or not. Holy crap. Yeah. But anyway, yes, she's got the cut in her head, and they go into the cafe, and that's where they kind of get drawn a little closer to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of starts their whole thing of him getting closer to her, and mm-hmm. you know, the fact she broke into his mom's house and dropped. I'm sorry, but do people not lock their doors? What the hell? So Mitch decides to have her over for dinner because she says, "Oh, I'm staying with my friend who's not her friend, Annie Worth." And
funny, she goes over to that Hayworth woman's house and asks to stay, and she pretty much tells her yes, even though it's with some misgivings, you know.
Well, I think she says yes because that she wanted to keep an eye on her. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Annie Hayworth, I think she agreed to have Daniels rent, you know, even though she could tell she was pursuing Mitch and Hayworth still had feelings for Mitch. I think she did it so she could kind of keep an eye on Miss Daniel, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you get that scene, that awkward scene after they decide that it's okay to rent the room from her, where Mitch calls Melania and are having that conversation, and Annie's in that chair. And she looks like she's just about to go over and kill Daniel. She's just like, "I'm not listening. No, no. Not going to try to kill her, no, because Mitch wouldn't like it." So, I mean, there is an interesting dynamic. While you may not care for these characters, there is interesting play going on between all of these folks. You know, and so then, yes, Daniels gets to dinner, and Mom's like, "Who the hell are you?" But again, you know, we've got that Alfred Hitchcock telltale weird relationship between Mom and son.
Yeah. What do we think about the relationship between Mommy and Sonny?
Well, I think it does play along what you were mentioning earlier, is that Dad is out of the picture. And so in some obscure way, maybe just slightly, he's the substitute in many ways, not like really creepy ways, but you know what I mean? For a presence mm-hmm. in the house, because he probably reminds her a lot of her husband. Okay. You know, I think maybe that's kind of the dynamic. And, you know, the feeling I almost get is that he is a mom's boy, but hides it.
Yeah, I get that because I think they're a little bit too close for comfort. And yet they don't really exactly show it.
Yeah, he knows how his mother is, and you know, in a pinch, if she made him choose between a woman and her, he would pick mother. You know, if she truly did, but she doesn't, you know, but again, we just get these, I don't know if it's the times or what, but just the way he referenced it, it was in the same way in North by Northwest, yeah. The way he calls his mom some of the names.
And I got that that way of thinking when after Jessica Tandy's character had gone through, well, evidently by this they had already been did the children get attacked once already?
No, this was dinner. This is just before the first attack. Okay. This was still within the first hour of the film.
So she actually went over to this other man. Jessica Tandy's character went over to this other man's home after, I think, a bird had... That's right. There was a bird that had flown into the door of the Hayworth's place.
Right. Yep. And they were like, what the heck?
Yeah.
And then mom was going over to Ben's place, whoever Ben was. I forgot.
Yeah. Who they were. Just... And she found him dead with his eyes out.
Dude, how about that scene?
That was a wicked looking scene, wasn't it? I mean, they showed it from window to eye holes, you know?
That was just a creepy scene. I mean, she's looking through the house. You know something creepy happened. I mean, you're in a horror movie. You're watching a horror movie, so you're just waiting for her to find something.
The window is broken. I swear to God, there was a bird still in the window.
Oh, there was. Yeah, there was.
Of course, there was another bird laying on the bed and feathers strewn about and vases broken. It's like, what the hell? The bird flew in and just... had a massive attack and just decided to throw things around like a poltergeist.
Well, there were a number of birds in there, so they kind of trashed the place, and then they poked his eyes out.
Smart birds,
huh?
These are some smart birds.
They're some scary birds, is what they are. So yeah, so he poked his eyes out. That was like freaking creepy as hell. And as you get that shot too, I mean, the makeup and everything effects in that scene, you don't expect it. I mean, we're in 63 now, so things are getting a little more graphic.
That's a gore scene in a 51 film, man.
Well, this is 63 now, so, but it is a gore scene. It's friggin' creepy. And he stays on it long enough for you to see too. It's not like, oh, we'll cut away real quick. You get to see the full-on bird damage done to this guy.
Oh yeah,
you know, which was just crazy, looking good. I loved the gore effects on that.
Oh yeah.
So that ends up happening. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, just before dinner, was the kids were getting harmed by the birds, and then
I have something to say to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I recently picked up the indicator copy of, well, some time ago, of Curse of the Demon.
Okay.
And I was watching the behind the scenes of it, and there's a scene in the film where the wizard or the evil guy, mm-hmm, is supposed to scare the children in the film. And originally he was supposed to pull out like snakes out of a hat, and right, then he was supposed to have a larger windstorm attack the children.
Mm-hmm.
But the censor boards did not allow this to happen. They just allowed rabbits to come out because they wanted it to be a kid-friendly atmosphere.
Oh, okay.
Well, they also they didn't want another thing like that to happen, since it happened in the birds.
Right. Yeah. Cause actually the way the attacks went, there was the dinner, which is the birds flying into the chimney, and they just kind of mess up the Brenner house, something fierce. And then she goes, finds no eyes. And then the kids are getting harmed by the birds.
That's something that didn't happen too often in this time period. Children getting hurt.
Oh, something fierce too, because that's the school scene, because she goes to see old Hayworth and you get that awesome scene. It's such a great scene where Melania goes to she's going to school and she notices a couple crows on top of the schoolhouse. Yeah, yep. And she's like, okay, that's not too bad. And then she goes in and she's like, I got to talk to Annie, and Annie's teaching class and the kids are just singing this really nice angelic song. So they're okay. So then she goes out and sits on the bench.
And she's having a cigarette.
And she's just having a cigarette. And it's just this mild scene, but we see a couple of crows on the old school jungle gym in the background, the old metal pipe one. At first, a couple crows land, and then we see her. And then we see a few more. And then you get that awesome shot where she follows the one crow and looks behind her. And there's just nothing but crows on the gym.
Having a Jungle Book moment. Hey, Jeb, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do?
It's from Jungle Book. You had that, and it was kind of like that. But what'd you think of that cinematography for that shot? The way he sets that up.
That was amazing. Actually, I think because it didn't pan. To the all of a sudden, you know, there were like maybe two,
yeah, then, two or three, yeah,
and then there were like five, six, seven, mm-hmm. And then it's like her eyes panned to the one crow, and then it flew around and panned back towards the where the crows were sitting kind of reminded me of the Pharisees in Jesus Christ Superstar. Those rafters or whatnot, in a sense. At least to me. I was thinking that in my mind.
Yeah.
They were there and it was like, holy shit, all these fucking crows just staring at you.
So many birds, too. You know, I mean, you hear stories, but we're talking a lot of birds in this one frame. It's just massive animals and amount of animals. You're just like, holy crap. And then she goes into the school building and she's just like, yeah, take a look out back. And then they're trying to get the kids out. And then the birds are attacking the kids. And folks, we're talking 1963 here. We're still talking kids in cinema. And I'm not talking about like a light attack where the birds are kind of swooping the kids, you know, and the kids are waving them off or whatnot. We got freaking birds on the back of kids actually pecking the shit out of them,
yeah,
and actually cutting them on screen.
Well, like, what was it? And it wasn't just this scene. There was that picnic scene too. You know.
Oh, yeah, that was before this. Yeah, with the picnic scene where you had the one bird sitting on top of the girl pecking her head.
And that's the exact same thing that they were doing here. And the way that he had the birds flying at them was amazing, too. I don't know how he did it, but I also remember going to the Alfred Hitchcock Museum and seeing that particular scene in 3D.
Oh, wow.
Because if you actually go to the museum in Orlando, Florida, you can actually see bits and pieces of the bird scenes in 3D. They give you some 3D glasses, and you go in, sit in the theater, and you see these massive birds sitting right on your shoulder.
Huh. Wow, that sounds like that'd be cool. I might check that out. But he didn't actually use a green screen on this, though. You know, they were learning compositing in that time, and it had been done. But they used a different type of blue screen, excuse me, back then, to try to do the match shots. They used what is it called? Sodium vapor process to do the composites. And there was only one place in the U.S. equipped to do it, and that was, go figure, Walt Disney Studios.
there was a moment in my life that I remember. Where birds flocked towards me. Mm-hmm. My dad did a lot of traveling, so we went to Australia and met him down there, and we went to this one beach called Pebble Beach, I believe it was called. And he said, go ahead, take out this cookie. And we did, and all these parrots came flocking towards us, and they just flew all around us, grabbing the cookies. You weren't supposed to feed the birds, but...
you lawbreaker, you
hanging off upside down, and I just could imagine like what would it take to anger these things?
Well, I got attacked by a bird. I was at Bay Beach Park, and for whatever reason, this bird decided to continually swoop me for like he took like three passes at me. I'm like, what the hell? I'm not doing anything, man.
I swear to God, do gulls just literally pick the worst days to poop on your cars?
Well, no, that not the word any day, but usually after you wash your car. So, so there was a bit of lack of bird poop in this film. Let's go that way. But there were a lot of birds, a lot of special effects in here, a massive amount for this time. And they looked good. I mean, when the birds were chasing the kids, I'm actually watching this effect going, this is 63, and this is actually looks really good.
Were any of them animatronic birds?
I think some were puppets. Many of them were live.
Okay, because there was one moment where one of the kids was actually holding one, and it looked like it was, you know, alive, you know?
They used live ones. I think they used some puppet ones as well. But they had a lot of live birds in this film. I forgot how many thousands of birds they actually had. It was insane. But yeah, well, that's just like the scene later on when our main character Daniels has that confrontation in the attic with the birds. They actually had birds tied to like nylon string to her. That's just crazy, you know. I thought the special effects with the birds every time they did the effects were really good. I mean, this kid, especially the kid attack, was crazy. Looked crazy good for 63. I'm like, I felt scared. And in fact, from the hour mark when the birds finally start getting into their waves and waves of attacks, this film is legitimately scary. it creeped me out.
I think say creepy, it was a fear factor because it, not only were these birds repeatedly attacking everyone and anyone, although I gotta say I was somewhat laughing at the part where the gasoline trailed from one car to the other, and they opened up the window, of course, shouting at him to not throw the match. Of course, what does he do?
He got blown the fuck up.
That's how
I have it in my notes. I couldn't believe that as well for that special effect, because yes, after the attack of the
it did an aerial shot, and to me that was like attack here.
It's like, here you go, here's your target. Because that was a great setup, because he had them all hiding in the cafe. People, I loved how her dad, still when she was trying to tell her news dad about the whole thing, he's like, oh, you're just being hysterical. I'm like, well, there is early 1960s approach to women. Oh, you're just being hysterical, and didn't quite believe her. But then you see that guy get hit with the bird who's pumping the gas, and yeah, you get that gas shot. And I love that overhead shot, like bird's eye view of the explosion.
Well, what do we think about the mother and her children that were inside that cafe? Because she kept on saying, stop scaring the children. And the little boys like, mother, are we going to get eaten by birds?
Well, yeah, because we get the talky part like Alfred has in his movies, where you get a lot of exposition going on. And this is where they're all debating about whether or not the birds are actually attacking deliberately or not.
And if you got this birdologist in there, this cannot happen.
Though she does reference an actual real event, which I guess actually inspired Hitchcock and the writer of this book. I think it inspired her from this event that actually happened, where a bunch of birds migrating ran into shit in the town, which kind of what helped inspire the movie as well. But yeah, the bird expert references that. But yeah, you're getting that whole debate where they're discussing the birds, and you get the mom and her kids, and she's like, well, keep it down, you're scaring the kids. And I'm like, it was a really interesting dynamic, because here you have all these adults talking and you have the mom, you know, saying you're scaring the kids. And somehow Alfred uses that parent to help build tension in this scene, because she's continuously telling him, please stop scaring the kids, stop scaring the kids, stop scaring the kids. You know, and then right after that, we get a bird attacking a station attendant. But
yeah,
I liked that dynamic. I liked her element in there, because she gave this weird feeling of tension in this what actually is just a scene of exposition of them trying to figure out what's going on.
Oh yeah,
you know, it adds just that little extra element, which I liked. You know, which she shows up later, because like every Alfred Hitchcock film, because the birds go into full swing after the explosion of the gas station, and we have the birds just massive attacking, and Daniels gets trapped in that phone booth, the famous phone booth scene where the birds are just attacking a phone booth. See, folks, see what happens to technology. If you didn't have cell phones, we'd still have phone booths, and they could protect you from the wild bird attack.
Of course, in this day and age, you ask a young kid, what's a phone booth? What do you mean? What is that?
But you get that awesome scene. So they get back, and that mom is back later. I'm glad you brought her up, because she throws in the one element, like Alfred always likes to throw in, is there just maybe a supernatural element to this? As the mom says, hey, these birds didn't start attacking till Daniel showed up. You're evil. And throws that question just for a moment, David. Tell me, doesn't that throw that idea in there just for a moment, going, maybe she did bring the birds?
Just for a moment. Maybe.
Well, yeah.
Because she doesn't want to be separated from her young.
Yes, yes. It never actually is explored, but he likes adding just that element to question, just for a moment even. Could it be supernatural? Could it be something mystical? Could the birds be attached to her? But they aren't. They just attack in waves, which apparently, according to the book, it was tied to the tides when the birds attacked. But that's never addressed here. Alfred doesn't give any reason, because he wants to keep the unknown, because he wants to keep that fear factor, like you said. So they finally, after the other attack with the explosion subsides, which again, that explosion of the guy lighting himself on fire, I thought that was a great effect. I'm like, holy crap.
That happens instantly.
We get down to the kind of this final act here, where good old Mitch and Daniels and, you know, Mitch's sister and mom are held up into his home. And now, I was having a discussion a little bit earlier tonight with Dawn, because she watched it. And David, this scene where he's boarding up the house, and then you have the birds attacking from the outside, when they tell me this didn't influence George Romero.
This had to have influenced George Romero in some respect, because you got to look at that door, for instance, where all the beaks are going into that door, and you're seeing this shit from the inside. And these birds are literally giving damage. I got to talk about an earlier scene, though. What about that moment where they're inside the home and the birds fly out of the fireplace, man?
Oh, you mean way in the beginning? You mean way in the beginning when they first got their dinner interrupted by the birds?
Correct.
Yeah, that was insane.
I believe those were hummingbirds, in fact. Those look like hummingbirds to me.
I'm not sure if they were. They were supposed to be sparrows.
Okay.
According to the dead birds that they're studying, which you get that scene where you get the mom trying to clean up after the birds were there and it keeps finding dead bodies.
Which is part of what brought her madness on and made her say that, I wish I were strong.
Yeah. Yeah, because that then circles back around later on when they're inside the boarded up house and the birds are coming and they're attacking things, which again had to influence Romero. I mean, down to the birds get through one of the barricades and they're grabbing Mitch as he's trying to fight them off. I mean, I'm watching this whole sequence going, oh man, all you got to do is replace zombies with birds, and you've got the template here for every zombie film that comes out after the birds.
Exactly. Well, apparently they were using some kind of a yellow screen or mm-hmm. something like that for this effect with some vapor technology. So,
right, yeah, the sodium vapor.
Yeah.
Process, yeah. But you know, you had real birds in here and you had puppets as well. And yeah, this whole thing, he boards up the minute he started boarding up the house. I'm like, wow. And this is 5 years before Night of the Living Dead, folks. But if you look at Night of the Living Dead, the house scene, and you look at this scene with the birds breaking in and it's like, holy crap. There are so many parallels, and even to the point of when you get Daniels up to that near that final scene where she gets up in the attic room and she gets trapped and they're just pecking the hell out of her. You know, that's just like a scene where, zombies broke through a wall or whatnot. And they're trapped in a room, you know, and they're tearing at you. That was a brutal scene. What'd you think of that, of her going up and, you know, into that attic room to see what was scratching, and she just gets trapped? And just, what'd you think of that sequence where she's just getting attacked by the birds?
That was scary. I mean, that was a very tense moment. I mean, she goes up there, you know, out of protection sake, you know, to see what, you know, what's going on. What's that, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah. You want to make sure that your area is secure. So she goes into the attic and she just gets attacked and mauled by these creatures, and it sets her into a state of shock afterwards, and I don't think she ever got out of that state.
No, she never really gets out of that state. After that attack, she's pretty well done, which kind of sums up what happened in real life, because I guess that scene took a week to shoot. And then she had to go to the hospital for exhaustion because it was so taxing doing that scene. That one scene where she's getting attacked by the birds in the attic took a week, took like 5 days straight of shooting. And apparently she got exhausted. So what I was reading up on, when she's being carried down the stairs after that attack, that's actually her stand-in. That's not actually her, apparently. But yeah, it's just brutal, and it puts her in shock, and she's done for the rest of the movie, the last 15, 20 minutes. So then we have Mitch trying to figure out how to get the hell out of here because she's all tore the hell up.
So there were 3,200 birds that were trained for this movie.
That's insane. And a lot of them were in that fine.
Revealed that on the Dick Cavett show in 1968.
And a lot of them, I think, were in that final scene. So yeah, Mitch gets the car out in that, and you get that interesting scene because he puts Melania in the back seat with his mom, and the mom and her have been kind of at ends throughout most of the movie. Daniel's mentioned earlier,
I think they're all kind of traumatized.
Well, by this time, yes. no one wants to fight because they're just tired of birds attacking. But you had a scene way earlier in the film where Daniels talks about she didn't have a nice relationship with her mom. Mm-hmm. And then you get an interesting just little bit in here at the end where he puts her in the back of the car with the mom, and the mom's actually holding Daniels, and she looks up and she actually kind of gives a little smile. And I'm like, that's what makes Alfred Hitchcock so cool. Just this one little scene at the near the beginning where she talks about her mom and she didn't have a good relationship. And now you have this where even in shock, she's being held by the mom and she smiles, and you can kind of tell she warms up just a little, like, oh, you can be, you know, you can be my mom.
The little duckling going around saying, are you my mommy?
Yeah. Anyways. And but the film then just ends.
I know. That was an abrupt end. What did you think of that ending?
I liked it because it didn't give a resolve exactly. They drive away and the birds are just sitting there, but you know another wave is coming.
Yeah.
And you did hear over a radio that they are starting to branch out to other towns.
Well, yeah, and they also closed off all the roads.
Right. They also closed off all the roads. So, you know, wherever they're going, they're going to probably end up being stopped. But by not doing the end like normal we would get, it just leaves this open to kind of your brain to go,
what the fuck did I just watch?
What's going to happen next? You know? And yeah, could you imagine people in the theater, especially back then? I mean, holy crap, birds just randomly attack you. And he does it in such the Hitchcock way that he makes it believable to where you are creeped out. This is a genuinely scary film.
It is. I mean, I guarantee to you, every time I watch this film, there's at least something that creeps me out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a general, you know, it's not that it's a fear level, but I definitely feel, you know, especially when, you know, you see the massive birds attacking the phone booth. I mean, my God, all those birds done that specific way where they look so real and so lifelike and so big and so, you know. And having some of the experiences that I've seen with this film, having gone to the Alfred Hitchcock Museum and seen that makes it all the more, you know, more lifelike for me.
And well, they don't let her out of the phone booth. I mean, he gives you a genuine feeling of being trapped by these birds, which a lot of film, and I'm going to toss the get off my lawn moment here, but a lot of modern films miss. I mean, here he doesn't let up. He makes you feel genuinely trapped, whether they're trapped in a car with a shitload of birds around them, whether or not you're trapped in a phone booth or a house. You legitimately feel trapped because of these sequences, which, to my surprise, these effects sequences and things with the birds go on a lot longer than you think they're going to.
Yeah.
Did you find that as well? I mean, like from the kids being attacked to the bird, wasn't it kind of crazy that you're like, this is a 63 film and there's a lot of stuff going on.
And well, and even those scenes with just those birds just sitting up on those ledges, you know, even that kind of like creeps me out because then you're thinking of, okay, how do I walk past these motherfucking things? You know, how do I get from A to point B without letting them know I'm here?
Yeah, so you get that Hitchcock tension because we don't get a full explanation of why the birds are doing it. We don't get an explanation of what triggers their attack. So at times the birds are just sitting staring at the humans and you're like, okay, they're not attacking, but when they're going to attack, are they going to attack? Then you get that scene, like I said, where Mitch opens the door after the birds have attacked the house, but it seems like the attack has subsided. He opens the door, the birds are still there. Mm-hmm. And he's got to walk to the car and you're like, shit, what's going to trigger them? Why aren't they attacking? Are they going to attack? You know, it's like, he does that so well in this film. And David, did you notice the one thing out of the other Hitchcock films that we've covered, one thing that was truly lacking in this movie, an element that was missing that you don't even realize it until it's pointed out, really. No music.
Was there no music?
There is no soundtrack. You get the opening sequence, and you get the end with the fanfare of the first time Universal Pictures after it shows up. This is the first film that actually, it wasn't Universal International. It was just, I believe, Universal Pictures, if I remember correctly. But the rest of the film, there isn't music. There is not a score to this film. Which blew me away. I was reading up on it, and I'm like, holy crap, you're right. A lot of the sound is filled by the sound of birds in this movie.
Now that you mention it, no, I didn't hear. I didn't hear much of anything beyond the title. You know.
Yeah, there is no actual musical score for it at all. Although, according to trivia, Hitchcock still does give Bernard Herrmann credit as sound consultant. As far as music goes, there is none, which adds that extra creep factor, because you get nothing during those action sequences but bird sounds. Continuous bird sounds of them attacking. No music to distract you, nothing. You're just that, and you're just like, ah.
I actually did not notice that.
Because he put so much other sounds in there, you don't really realize it.
Damn it, I'm going to have to watch the movie.
But again, that's the craft of Hitchcock. But I thought this was a quirkier film than his other one, because in this one, his focus truly was more on the birds and the terror from the birds, as this being a straight up horror film. So your characters, while they are fleshed out a bit and they do have a little bit, they are different than what we're used to seeing from a Hitchcock film, I think, as far as the characters goes, because he knows you're there for the birds. You know, I honestly think that's part of it, is we don't necessarily have as many charismatic characters because it's that horror philosophy of, it doesn't really matter who you have, just as long as you have somebody who is at least somewhat interesting enough for you to not want to die. But you're there for the bad guy. I mean, how many slasher films, you don't go see Nightmare on Elm Street films for the heroes. You don't see Friday the 13th films for the heroes.
No.
You don't watch Psycho for the though there aren't really any heroes.
Were there really any heroes in this film?
Not really. They're survivors, but you know, Mitch is kind of out of, I guess if you want to call heroic, he's the hero per se, but he's a guy that I personally never feel like you really connect with. So even though he's the hero, you're just kind of like, eh, yeah, okay. You know, he's doing the nice guy things. But he's kind of looking out for his own skin as well. So, yeah. I mean, he's helping people and all, but I guess I never felt really a connection to most of the characters, but I don't think we're really meant to. What do you think on that? Do you think you're not really meant to be too connected? I mean, just enough so you don't want anything bad to happen to someone, but at the same time, not nearly as connected as, say, his previous movies with the characters.
I don't think we were really that meant to. The only characters that I can really feel bad about are the actual children.
Yeah.
That were attacked. I mean, yeah, I don't know whether they were these snot-nosed kids or what not, but you know, the bratty kind. But you still feel for the children because they really didn't warrant any attack. They were doing nothing. You know.
Yeah, you do feel the most more of the kids because the innocence, even, you know, because then you get Kathy who, you know, had birds come down her chimney, the poor girl, and, you know, has seen her brother's girlfriend, I guess, or friend who she kind of gets attached to, just get the peck the shit out of by birds and that. And you see the effects on her through all this. And yeah, the kids are the ones you feel the worst for. You know, I mean, you feel bad for the other people, but you're kind of like, yeah, okay. Well, I feel bad that she died. Okay, but we move on. But the kids, it's just like, holy crap, these poor kids are going to need some serious therapy. You know? Was there a character scene or something else you want to talk about with this film, David? Anything that stood out for you?
I think I've covered most of it.
Sure.
There was the part where she had the children doing the fire drill and they were going like, ah.
Yeah, I think we covered it. I mean, it is, I think we both can agree though, this has a different feeling versus the other Hitchcock films, even from like Psycho, his real true horror film. This just has a different.
I have to say that this is his most violent
film. Oh God, yeah, this film is violent. Holy crap!
I would have to say this falls under the rated R.
This film is intensely violent, especially the last hour of this film. Every bird attack is brutal. I mean, these aren't just passing birds. Like I said before,
they're out for blood.
They're seriously out for blood, and you get to see how brutal these attacks are. This is, I think, his most violent.
Well, and apparently this movie has really no characters that were in here that were, you know, the same as the original story that Daphne du Maurier put together.
Yeah, it was pretty much just the concept and the title.
Yeah.
Because there was something, you know, there was, yeah, because he was, because apparently, like I mentioned before, which is actually referenced in the movie, there was Santa Cruz seabird attack. Basically they were migrating and they were too low and they started attacking people in outdoors and that, running into them, into the flashlight beams, and he optioned the story actually in 1955 from her, but he then began filming in 1961 right after the story of the attack.
Well, and in the original story, the main character discovers that this pattern is directly related to the rise and fall of the tides.
Right.
And is this to their advantage? Whereas, you know, the movie seems to follow the same pattern, but never makes a direct connection.
Which I like, because in all honesty, I don't. A lot of times, I don't like too much exploration, and I think giving a definition or a motivation, a true motivation to why the birds were in this pattern of attacks in the movie, I think takes away a little bit of that element. Cause then you're like, oh, well, it's because of the tides. Okay. Well, as long as you time it out for the tides, no problem. Whereas if you don't give that reasoning, you're like, still got that tension of when are they going to attack? What's their motivation for attacking? They kind of allude to it, but you never quite get it for sure. And I think that unknown helps keep that fear tension up just a little bit more than getting an explanation, which nowadays most modern filmmakers feel, at least for the wide release films, feel like they got to give you an explanation of shit. It's like, well, this is why. No, rather than just letting it be, nope, this is why. It's like, no, don't give me an explanation for everything. I kind of like a little mystery to my bad guys. And in this case, I liked it. The fact, I mean, what'd you think? Would you have preferred an explanation?
Ah, I don't think so. I think the film stands alone as it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely a level of cinema that I don't think anyone can replicate. Again, yeah. In the same intensity and the same setup to violence that it went from the slow, you know, realization of the body count to the, you know, attacks, the frequent attacks, not just on the people, but on the children, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, you had maybe somewhat, you know, you did have somewhat violent films during, you know, in 63, but nothing quite like that. I mean, it's Alfred, you know? it's Alfred Hitchcock, and this is a brutal film.
Well, it just kind of, you know, I guess seeing it again, the first time that I've seen this, I didn't take a look at the room around that poked out victim's eyes, you know, right. Ben's murder scene.
Mm-hmm.
And this time I actually took a look at the surroundings, and my God, that was intense, you know?
It's horrific. It's like,
I mean, I must not have paid attention to that particular scene, mm-hmm, until I've seen it with my cinematic eye, you know?
Well, I mean, you get that scene, and like I said, the guy who gets blown up on camera, pretty much, I mean, there's an edit in between, but still, it's like, he cuts back. It's like, whoa. I mean, you see a body there flaming in the doorway of the car. And I'm like, holy crap. Yeah. You know, it's like, man.
And they show an aerial of it. It's like, okay, are they actually doing a video of a small little caricature of the town having a little fire in between, just like Back to the Future?
You never know. They could have. I do know that Hitchcock did not like shooting on location, so a lot of the stuff they shot was still on stage as well. Yeah,
the phone booth was in was done in the studio.
Yeah, so was the cafe. They recreated the cafe, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
As well. So, you know, a lot of that, some of that was on stage, some of it was location. He blends it well, in all honesty. There's only a few scenes in here that get that telltale classic, oh, they're on a stage, look to it. But yeah, I mean, I dig this film. This film is a legitimately scary horror film, even for 1963. It creeps you out. And yeah, if you don't see a template for a zombie film in this final act, you're not paying attention. You're not paying attention, because you could see how this movie influenced a number of the horror films to come, you know, that come after this. And yeah, I think I'd recommend The Birds. What about you? Would you recommend The Birds?
I would definitely recommend The Birds. It's among one of my favorites, and I have quite a lot. But
the first chunk is a little bit tough to get through, I will say, but trust me, it builds on you, and before you know it, you're just like, holy crap, this film's insane. And it's a lot better than Birdemic.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
I don't buy to this day that the filmmaker was supposedly making a parody of The Birds. I don't buy it. You made a crappy film, and then you tried to play it off once people were joking about it, that, oh yeah, it was meant to be a joke. Uh-huh. No.
Or so.
You don't legitimately make a movie that bad. He just, the guy couldn't act walk. Come on. So yes, yeah, see The Birds. Birdemic's not even close. Though you do have a bird attack halfway through Birdemic, just like you do have in The Birds. Bird, and I use it in quotes, birds. They're animated GIFs in Birdemic.
And if you can get the wings of Icarus, that would be amazing to watch this film in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it would. Oh, man. So I think we'll wrap it up tonight. So I hope we wet your whistle for the birds. Now, David, this is where you get the license to shill and tell folks where they can find you at when you're not here.
I am David Streggy. I run Inside Movies Galore, as well as blog at Movies Galore of Milwaukee. And you can find many of my reviews and podcast material over on our YouTube channel on Inside Movies Galore.
Awesome. Yeah, check out that stuff. Some great stuff there, folks. Thank you so much for watching. Yes, we do have one more Alfred Hitchcock film to go before the end of the year. That'll be next week. I will leave it a mystery for you for now. But yeah, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you to our listeners there now that we are on Spotify. I appreciate that quite a bit. Shout out to our listeners out there. We've got a couple of international listeners. So we appreciate you and your support. And yeah, now just say goodnight, David.
Good night.
Hey, all my friends out there looking for more Spoiler Room goodness, then why don't you check out our brand new Patreon page, patreon.com/specialmarkproductions, where you can get access to exclusive Spoiler Room episodes and a whole lot more. You can also find us on Facebook groups at SMPRD and on to Twitter at Special Mark Pro. Let your voice be heard and let us know what you would like to see in the Spoiler Room, as well as just how we're doing in general. We appreciate your support, and remember, in the Spoiler Room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.